Hello and welcome to this podcast from the BBC World Service. Please let us know what you think and tell other people about us on social media. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
I'm Gabriel Gatehouse, and from BBC Radio 4, this is Series 2 of The Coming Storm. There's a divide in American politics between those who think democracy is in peril and those who think it's already been subverted, hollowed out from the inside. As America prepares to elect its next president, we go through the looking glass into a world where nothing is as it seems and the institutions of the state are a facade. Listen wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Hello and welcome to NewsHour from the BBC World Service. We're coming to you live from London. I'm Rob Young. And we will spend much of the programme today looking at a dramatic moment in the escalating conflict between Israel and the Lebanese militant group Hezbollah. It has been confirmed that the veteran leader of Hezbollah, Hassan Nasrallah, was killed in a massive airstrike on the Lebanese capital Beirut on Friday. Well, earlier on, before Hezbollah confirmed Hassan Nasrallah's death, I spoke to Lieutenant Colonel Peter Lerner, a spokesman for the Israel Defence Forces. I asked him how the military knew that Hassan Nasrallah had been killed.
The assessment is multi-pronged, and I would say it's not an assessment, it's actually more of a judgment based on intelligence, real-time intelligence, confirmation from the field, probability that is a result of what we were striking, where we were striking, how we were striking. When we come together to that, we came to the conclusion and confirm that conclusion this morning.
Some people have said that this is a massive escalatory move by Israel, that it could draw Hezbollah to use some of its longer-range missiles to attack Israel, could perhaps draw Iran directly into conflict with Israel. What do you think the impact of Hassan Nasrallah's death, if confirmed, would be?
So I would say, first of all, the strike on Nasrallah itself was a critical part of our military operation. There have been many doors out of this step that Nasrallah himself chose not to go through and to continue his aggression and hostility towards Israel. So the targeted strike against the underground headquarters is part, and against him and his senior commanders, the terrorists that were with him, is an absolutely part of our message that we won't allow the ongoing threat to Israeli civilians who have now been living out of home for almost a year, some 60,000 people. And that's why we feel it was absolutely necessary to push forward in order to take Hezbollah and the threat that they pose, including with their long-range strategic precision-guided missiles, off of the table. We've been going through the motions of diplomacy for the last year, and that was, up until this week, the chosen route. But we've reached a new decision, and the government instructed the military to ensure that Israelis will be able to get back home, at the 60,000 Israelis. And that's why we conducted a series of strikes.
Rockets are still being fired, though, by Hezbollah in Lebanon into Israel. So what you have been doing so far has not eliminated the threat to Israel. Do you think it will be necessary to send troops into Lebanon?
So Hezbollah has been building its armory, weapons capabilities, its forces for the last 20 years. So there's no quick fix to this development. And indeed, as we speak, there are still rockets coming over. But what I can say is that the strike that conducted against the leadership, and indeed the decapitation of almost all of their senior leaders, commanders, field commanders, operational commanders in the last week, has disrupted their efforts, but not negated and eliminated them completely. So we will see the ongoing actions and ongoing launch of rockets and missiles, and we have even throughout the course of this morning. And of course, the military needs to be prepared for the next stages, and that stage may require ground offensive, ground forces.
More than 700 people in Lebanon have been killed over the past week and a half, according to Lebanon's health minister. This is about allowing 60,000 Israelis to go back to their homes in the north of Israel. Yet we've had well over 100,000 Lebanese forced to flee their homes in the south of Lebanon. What is the price that Israel thinks Lebanon and the Lebanese people should pay to allow Israelis to go back to their homes?
Well, ideally, that question should be reverted to Hezbollah, because they chose on the 8th of October to launch their war on Israel. So all efforts from our perspective continue to be made to minimize civilian harm. All civilian lives in this war that have been lost are tragic. The responsibility for those lives lies squarely with the terrorists who chose to put civilians in harm's way.
Peter Lernover, spokesman for the Israel Defense Forces. Well, with us for the first half of the programme is Dr. Lina Khatib, director of the SOAS Middle East Institute in London. Welcome to the programme. In a moment, we'll come to you to tell us a bit more about Hassan Nasrallah. But first, I want you to listen to an interview that we recorded just before we came on air. It is with Abir Bassam, who writes for the Lebanese news website Al-Ahed News, which is owned by Hezbollah. And she contacted NewsHour to confirm to us Hassan Nasrallah's death and was clearly very upset.
Well, now the Hezbollah on Al-Manar, its official TV, declared the martyrdom of Sayyid Nasrallah. It's the very, very emotional. People in the streets are now screaming and wailing. It's a very unfortunate, I mean, God. And now Israel will see hell, how hell comes on it. Israel will see hell now. It's not going to be okay. Not even close.
You're clearly very upset to learn of the death of Hassan Nasrallah. Just tell us why he meant so much to you and other people in Lebanon.
It's not only that his personality or his character or what he represents. He represents the liberation of South Lebanon and the end of an Israeli occupation that lasted for more than 25 years. The Islamic resistance ended and Israeli aggression on Lebanon. And now it's going all over again.
How do you think Hezbollah will be able to operate without Hassan Nasrallah as its head?
Hezbollah will operate. I mean, Sayyid Abbas Mousawi was assassinated by Israel as well. And look where we reached, how the resistance, how strong it became. Can you imagine how stronger it will become after his martyrdom? Someone will come, will lead the party, and everything will go as it is planned.
When you said before that Hezbollah will unleash hell on Israel, what do you mean by that?
Now everyone is a possible target. I believe that.
Abir Bassam there, who writes for a Lebanese-owned news website, Al-Ahed News. Lina Khatib from the SOAS Middle Institute in London. She was clearly very emotional. How extreme a response do you think that is? Is that something that many people in Lebanon will be feeling, a view people will be expressing?
News of Nasrallah's killing was announced. I was on the phone to a journalist in Lebanon who just said, someone across the hall just started crying inconsolably. Something must have happened. And then we found out it was Nasrallah's killing announcement by Hezbollah. So yeah, certainly. This kind of reaction is, I think, genuine amongst Hezbollah's constituents who used to see in Nasrallah a larger than life father figure, savior figure. They idolized him. And I think they never thought they would see this day come.
We heard before the death of Hassan Nasrallah was announced that perhaps a majority of people in Lebanon do not like Hezbollah. They do not like the influence it has in the country. So will a lot of people in Lebanon welcome a blow to an organization they dislike?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say roughly 2/3 of the Lebanese population does not like Hezbollah. But that doesn't mean that they necessarily wanted to see, Hezbollah weakened in this particular way. I think the majority of people in Lebanon do not want to see conflict in their country and would have preferred to see a diplomatic way out of Lebanon's political woes. However, having said that, of course, you know, they will be probably a bit relieved that Nasrallah is out of the picture. But at the same time, they are also aware that the killing of Hezbollah's leader, Nasrallah, does not automatically mean the collapse of Hezbollah itself. And so we have to be a bit measured in, you know, how welcome this news will be in Lebanon.
Dr. Lina Khatib, for now, thank you. But do stay with us. We'll come back to you in a few minutes' time. I want to cross now to Beirut and speak to our correspondent there, Lina Sinjab. Lina, we'll be hearing more about Hassan Nasrallah, who he was and his influence in just a moment. But can you give us a sense of what people are saying, how they are reacting in Beirut today?
Well, the people of Dahiyeh who fled Dahiyeh this morning after the airstrikes, they are stretched out in almost every street in Beirut, on the seaside, in central town, in downtown. So, I mean, even where I am, I could hear the cries and the yelling of people following the confirmation from Hezbollah on the death of Nasrallah. So, of course, you know, the Shia community, the supporters of Hezbollah are in complete shock. He is a big figure for them, and he represents the strength, the unity. He represents, you know, fighting Israel for them, despite the prices that they've been paying repeatedly because of Hezbollah's involvement in, you know, violence and hostilities with Israel. But at the same time, I think the whole country is very cautiously waiting in anticipation to see what's going to happen next. This is big news. He is not an ordinary person. He's someone who was almost the decision maker of the fate of the whole country. They are in the party. They are in every corner of the structure of the state. So, you know, any uncalculated reaction from people who disliked Hezbollah might turn things on the ground into really hostility on an internal level. These are really crucial times in Lebanon, crucial times in terms with what Israel wants to do next, and crucial time in the region as well, because Hezbollah, don't forget, they have presence in Syria, they have presence here, they have presence in Yemen, they have presence in Iraq. So, you know, I think everyone among leadership in Hezbollah, whoever is left of the leadership of Hezbollah, will be recalculating their moves wherever communication is available. Don't forget that, you know, last week's blow of the pager issue have disconnected their communication among their leadership. So they're really hit hard from, you know, the heart of the organization, but now also the head of the organization is eliminated. These are very crucial times for, you know, Lebanon and for the safety of the country internally and in terms of its, you know, the situation with the Israeli intentions to continue with this attack against the group.
Lina Sinjab, our correspondent in Beirut, thank you. And I'm watching some live video images from Beirut of thick smoke rising above the Lebanese capital. Later on, we'll hear about Iran's response to this. Iran, of course, a backer of Hezbollah. This is NewsHour. Coming up, we'll speak to a former Israeli Defence Force intelligence officer living close to the border with Lebanon in an area targeted by Hezbollah rocket strikes.
The suffering is on both sides. The feeling that somebody is threatening us is on both sides. It's not just in Lebanon, and you cannot ignore the suffering that we have here in the past year and in the past 18 years while Hezbollah was rearming.
And a reminder of our main headline, Hezbollah has confirmed that its leader, Hassan Nasrallah, has been killed in an Israeli airstrike. The Iran-backed group vowed to continue its fight against Israel. As fears of a regional conflict grow, Iran's supreme leader has expressed solidarity with Hezbollah, saying it would continue to lead the so-called resistance. This is Rob Young with NewsHour live from the BBC in London. Let's cross to Jerusalem now and speak to the BBC's John Donison, who is there. Hi, John. Welcome back to the programme. Despite the death of Hassan Nasrallah, Hezbollah has been launching rockets again into Israel today.
Yes, not much has changed in that respect. There have been dozens of rockets fired into northern Israel this morning. And actually, in the moments after Israel announced it had killed Hassan Nasrallah, we heard loud explosions as far south as here in Jerusalem. And on the horizon, I could see what looked like Hezbollah rockets being intercepted by Israel's Iron Dome missile defense shield. So certainly they have given some sort of response this morning. The question is, as we've been hearing, where does it go from here?
Does the death of Hassan Nasrallah change, if at all, what Israel does next?
I don't think it does, to be honest, because I think Israel clearly feels that it has the boot on the throat of Hezbollah at the moment. And Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, Israel's leader, has said that he is determined to allow those 60,000 Israeli citizens to return to their homes in the north, and he is determined to defeat Hezbollah. So there have been continued airstrikes today, as you were suggesting from those videos you were looking at in Beirut, into Lebanon today from Israel, and I think that is going to continue. I think it's significant, though, because up until this point, I guess Israel has made the calculation throughout all the war in Gaza and with this growing escalation in violence on its northern border with Lebanon, that Iran, who of course backs, founded, funds, gives weapons to Hezbollah, did not want to get involved directly in a wider regional war. Well, the assassination of Hassan Nasrallah is going to put that theory to the test, I think, in the coming days and weeks.
When we spoke to the Israel Defense Forces spokesman earlier on in the programme, he said that it is still on the table, the possibility of Israeli forces going into Lebanon. Are people being called up? Are there visible preparations being made for that eventuality?
They have been increasing the number of troops up on the border with Lebanon, and there are many people who think that in order to completely dismantle Hezbollah, it's going to take more than airstrikes. Now, there have been huge efforts to dismantle the leadership of Hezbollah in the last few weeks. It's not just Hassan Nasrallah. Much of the upper echelon's senior commanders have been killed in the last few weeks. But Hezbollah still has a very large arsenal of weapons. It has a large military infrastructure, particularly in the south of Lebanon. And to get rid of that is probably going to take troops on the ground. But that will come at a cost, because you'll remember back in 2006, which was the last time we had a full-scale war between Hezbollah and Israel, Israel went in on the ground, and in the end, it was pushed back, and it lost a large number of soldiers. So we don't know whether a ground invasion is going to happen. I heard the interview with Peter Lerner, and I'm sure he wasn't prepared to say. He probably doesn't know. But it is definitely a possibility.
John Donison in Jerusalem. Thank you. Well, let's go back to Dr. Lina Khatib, director of the SOAS Middle East Institute in London, to give us a sense, Lina, of who Hassan Nasrallah was and his power. When we heard our correspondent in Beirut hint at this before, he was perhaps the most powerful person in Lebanon, more powerful than the president or the prime minister.
Well, especially that Lebanon these days does not have a president and only a caretaker prime minister. But even when it did have a bona fide president and not just a caretaker cabinet, Hezbollah was de facto in charge of the country in many ways. It did not control it formally, but informally. And part of this control happened through intimidation. And Hezbollah was leaning on this ability to inflict terror amongst its opponents to claim this political power. Nasrallah, of course, represented the might of Hezbollah for its opponents and its allies alike, actually, in Lebanon and beyond.
And so how crucial was he in building up Hezbollah into the military and political force that it is today?
I would not say he was the person responsible for that. However, he played a very significant role. The reason why I say that is because Hezbollah was never run in a very strict pyramid-like fashion with only one person at the top dictating most decisions. Decisions are taken by a group of people within Hezbollah as well as with involvement by Iran. And this setup has allowed Hezbollah to continue despite the various setbacks in its history, such as the assassination of Nasrallah's predecessor in 1992. But certainly with Nasrallah having been the longest serving Secretary General of Hezbollah, being at the helm at a time when Hezbollah's military strength grew exponentially after its last war with Israel in 2006, being there when Hezbollah declared its two big victories against Israel, one being 2006 and the previous one being the 2000 withdrawal of Israeli troops from southern Lebanon after occupying the country for almost two decades. Hezbollah has, you know, had claimed a lot of credibility because of his involvement in this. And also he played a role in mentoring other groups backed by Iran in the region, like the Houthis in Yemen. So definitely he wasn't just, you know, a bureaucratic figure.
Yeah, I see that Iraq has just announced 3 days of mourning over the death of Hassan Nasrallah. And we're going to be hearing from an Iranian voice later on in the programme. But what do you think this moment potentially means for the region?
What this means is because Hezbollah is Iran's most valuable asset in the region, the strongest armed group that Iran supports in the region, the fact that Hezbollah has been shown to be so weak by Israel will actually be terrifying for all those other groups in the region who will now be concerned about their security, because they are all more junior to Hezbollah in terms of numbers, in terms of power. And in many ways, this is also a moral blow to those groups. So I think we may be beginning to see a new era in which Iran's relatively comfortable influence in the Middle East is being shaken.
And what about Lebanon and ordinary Lebanese people? What responsibility does Hassan Nasrallah bear for some of the dire conditions that many Lebanese have been living in since that port explosion and the kind of almost complete collapse of the economy that we've witnessed in recent years?
I would put Hezbollah at the top of the list of culprits. Of course, the problems in Lebanon are not down to any one group in the country's political elite. In fact, systemic corruption in the country helped Hezbollah rise to become the country's most powerful political and military actor. So, you know, the complicity is quite wide in this very toxic dynamic. However, it is Hezbollah that has dragged Lebanon into this current confrontation with Israel. It is Hezbollah that took its troops to fight in Syria to help the Assad regime. And this catalyzed all kinds of catastrophes, amongst which is the rise of Islamist jihadist extremists in Syria, who also came to threaten Lebanon's stability. And also Hezbollah having the veto in the Lebanese cabinet, not allowing the political process to move forward to elect a president. All these things Nasrallah was partly responsible for.
Thank you. Dr. Lina Khatib there from the SOAS Middle East Institute in London. Plenty more to come on that story. Stay with us here on NewsHour.
I'm Gabriel Gatehouse, and from BBC Radio 4, this is Series 2 of The Coming Storm. There's a divide in American politics between those who think democracy is in peril and those who think it's already been subverted, hollowed out from the inside. As America prepares to elect its next president, we go through the looking glass into a world where nothing is as it seems and the institutions of the state are a facade. Listen wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Well, Welcome back to NewsHour. Now, it is just over a month until Americans vote in what's turned into a very tight presidential election. The Vice President, Kamala Harris, who's running for the Democrats, has been in Arizona on the border with Mexico, pledging to spend millions of dollars on tougher border security. But can Kamala Harris, who's been in office for over 3 years, convincingly present herself as the one to tackle the issue? Our North America editor Sarah Smith has been finding out.
Somos! Amigos! Somos! Samaritanos!
What were you saying?
That we're friends and we're Samaritans.
Gail Kocurek is a volunteer who drives down to the southern border to hand out food and water to migrants who are on the Mexican side.
Hola.
Hola.
As she shouts, a small group of men emerge from the undergrowth where they were waiting until nightfall before crossing into the US.
Más agua, un momento.
Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome.
One 20-year-old Mexican man, who told us to call him Miguel, explained why he feels the need to risk entering the U.S. illegally.
I only go to work. I want to help to my family for and give them a better life. I want to pay taxes. I want to work by the legal way.
But you'll be in America illegally and working illegally. Why is that better than working in Mexico?
Because in the United States, you can save a little more.
We were talking through a large gap in the infamous border wall. It won't be difficult for Miguel and his companions to walk over into America, but it could be dangerous. It's nearly 40 degrees, and hundreds of migrants die in the desert heat every year. Kamala Harris once called Donald Trump's beloved wall a medieval vanity project. But now she's promising more security, aware that this is her weakest electoral issue.
What's this?
This is a water trough. I put in a drinking fountain for anybody who wants to come by and get a drink of water.
Jim Chilton is an Arizona rancher who wants to stop migrants crossing onto his enormous 50,000-acre property. But he still provides drinking water because he also doesn't want people dying on his land.
In 2023, we had 3 people die on the ranch. And how many more are out there? I mean, 50,000 acres. How many dead bodies are out there that have never been found? No one deserves to die of dehydration. It's outrageous. That's why we need to secure the border.
He has set up motion-activated cameras that show thousands of people crossing his ranch every year. And he does not believe that if elected, Kamala Harris would stop them and secure that border.
And now she's changing her mind just to get votes and lie to us. Outrageous.
Why are you so sure it's a lie?
I've seen the evidence. We've had an
The landscape here in southern Arizona is vast and beautiful. It's also a key electoral battleground, territory where Ms. Harris knows she is vulnerable. That's why she's hoping to convince voters that she would get tough on immigration, which is, of course, Donald Trump's signature issue.
Our North America editor Sarah Smith there reporting from the US-Mexico border. You're listening to NewsHour. I'm Rob Young, live from London with NewsHour from the BBC. Let's return to our top story. Israel has killed Hassan Nasrallah, the veteran leader of Hezbollah, in a large missile strike on the group's headquarters in the Lebanese capital, Beirut. Hezbollah has confirmed his death in the past hour. There are fears of a wider regional war, particularly if Iran, which arms Hezbollah, decides to come to the group's aid. Well, our international editor Jeremy Bowen joins us now from Jerusalem. He's covered the region for many years. Jeremy, how big a moment would you say the killing of Hassan Nasrallah is?
It's a huge moment. It's a huge moment because of the stature of the man among his followers and the fact that for Israel, he has been in so many ways public enemy number one for a very long time. He presided over Hezbollah as it was built into a very formidable fighting force with the help of Iran. It made the occupation of Israel in the 1980s and 90s so difficult for the Israelis that in 2000 they pulled out. 2006, there was a war in which they fought Israel pretty much to a standstill. Since then, he's been more of a controversial figure inside Lebanon because Hezbollah has been seen, it used to be seen, 2006, he was seen as a national hero by many people. but then Hezbollah became rather overmighty, cruel, difficult, oppressive, and that made him less popular among people who weren't part of his true faithful. But, you know, the Israelis are cock-a-hoop about this, because this is a man who they saw as an absolute symbol of all those people who are out to destroy them, Iran and its allies, and they see this correctly as an enormous blow to that Iran-led alliance.
It's an enormous blow. Is it a decisive blow, or does it, in reality, not change much on the conflict that has taken place?
Well, we don't know, really. I mean, it's getting slightly into the realms of speculation to try and predict the way things will go. But I think what we can say is that they are not about to surrender, Hezbollah. And the Israelis have reflected that, because there's just been a briefing by the army, the Israeli army, in which they announced that they are banning public gatherings of more than 1,000 people, that they're telling people to be careful, stay close to their shelters. So they clearly are expecting some kind of a response, a fierce one, potentially. But I think from the other side, from those commanders who remain in Hezbollah and the undoubted younger generation who will rise up to take some of these posts, since so many of the senior figures have been killed in the last few months, they might, with the Iranians, think, well, hang on a minute, if we try and just throw everything at Israel, they'll just hit us even harder, and maybe even the Americans will get involved. So they don't want that. They might try a more clever response, but now I'm getting to the realms of speculation, because I have no idea really what's going through their heads, except I think what we have to know, what we must realise, is they will be reeling now from an absolutely seismic blow.
And we're going to hear an Iranian voice in just a moment, because there are so many questions about what if when it comes to the response of various countries and various groups. And all the while, the West is apparently powerless, despite the US providing the weapons and the planes that were probably used in that attack on Beirut.
Well, the Americans, backed by their Western allies, had a different scenario, not all-out war in Lebanon and perhaps in a wider part of the region. But their plan, which they've been trying to make happen over, well, really the last year, is to have a political agreement. And they've had an envoy in the region, a political agreement based on the UN Security Council Resolution 1701 that ended the 2006 war, in which Hezbollah would have to retreat from the Israeli border and stop attacking Israel. And the Nasrallah, while he was alive, had said that their attacks on Israel would continue until there was a ceasefire in Lebanon. So perhaps by calling for a ceasefire in Gaza, I beg your pardon. So perhaps by calling for that 21-day truce, which even yesterday at the United Nations they were hoping that perhaps Prime Minister Netanyahu would go towards accepting it, which of course he didn't. But I think they were hoping that if there was a 21-day window of opportunity for the diplomats, you never know, they might get close to a Gaza ceasefire. Had they done that, Hezbollah might have ceased fire themselves, would have given them a face-saving way out. But instead, the Israelis have thought, well, that's not acceptable. Like Hamas, they don't want to cease fire at the moment in Gaza. And so they have gone in very, very hard, and they will be patting themselves on the back for inflicting some absolutely grievous blows on one of their most obdurate enemies.
Jeremy Bowen, our international editor in Jerusalem, thank you. Well, a key question following the death of Hassan Nasrallah is, how will Iran respond? Iran funds and arms Hezbollah, which is part of what is called the Axis of Resistance, along with Hamas in Gaza, the Houthis in Yemen and other militia in the region. Well, a couple of hours ago, Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, published a statement on his official website, which one of my colleagues will read out.
It's incumbent upon all Muslims to stand by the people of Lebanon and the proud Hezbollah with whatever means they have, and assist them in confronting the usurping, oppressive and wicked regime. By the grace of God, Lebanon will make the invading, wicked and discredited enemy regret their actions. The fate of this region will be determined by the forces of resistance, with Hezbollah at the forefront.
Well, until now, Iran has largely stayed on the sidelines of the recent flare-up in the conflict between Israel and Hezbollah, relying instead on its proxy forces to attack Israel. So what is the view in Tehran? Dr. Saeed Mohammed Mirandi is from the University of Tehran and has links with the Iranian government. He spoke to us from the Lebanese capital, Beirut.
I think Iran will punish the Israeli regime. I think the regime is underestimating the power and wrath of Iran. This is going to be a major miscalculation. And I think the days and weeks ahead will show that Iran is determined to make sure that the regime does not defeat the people of Palestine or the people of Lebanon through this genocidal conduct. Iran will not allow the West to beat and batter the people of Lebanon and Gaza through their weapons.
Of course, Israel has denied any accusation of genocide. But when you say that Iran is determined to ensure that its forces are not beaten, do you suspect there would be a direct Iranian response, or would Iran rely on its proxy forces, on Hezbollah, on Hamas, on the Houthis and others?
These are not proxies. These are Iranian allies. Those forces that the West usually use to carry out terror attacks in our region, those are proxies. These are allies who are defending their land, their territory. They're blocking genocide.
But would there be a direct Iranian response, in your view?
I think that the Iranians will give a very punishing response. I'm not a government official, so I can't speak on behalf of anyone. But I think we will see the consequences of Iran's response. You will see it, I will see it, and everyone will see it.
Iran, though, has said repeatedly that it doesn't want a wider conflict. It seemed to very much be giving the view publicly that it did not want a direct confrontation between Iran and Israel. Do you think that calculation has changed?
I think Iran wants the international community to see that this is the West and Israel that are escalating. It is the West and Israel which are carrying out genocide collectively, and the global South, as we've seen in the UN General Assembly, is hostile towards the regime and its backers. When Netanyahu was speaking, we saw what happened. And these crimes against humanity that we've seen since yesterday, these have all been carried out after people walked out. The situation is going to get worse for the Israeli regime, and it's going to get worse for the West, because the West is seen by the world and by its own people as being behind this genocide.
Iran's new president, Masoud Pezeshkian, addressed the United Nations General Assembly this week and said that he wanted peace. Who will decide whether Iran decides to walk the path of peace or of war? Is it him or is it the Ayatollah?
It is the United States, the UK, the EU and Canada that are empowering the Israeli regime to carry out genocide. Iran wants peace. The region wants peace. But the West is hell-bent on supporting a racist colonial regime that's carrying out genocide.
Dr. Saeed Mohammed Mirandi there from the University of Tehran. Now, according to the United Nations, about 90,000 people have been displaced in Lebanon since Monday, adding to the 110,000 who'd fled their homes already. However, some have decided to stay on. My colleague Rebecca Kesby has been speaking to a woman who lives in southern Lebanon, surrounded by Israeli bombardment. We're not using her name in order to protect her identity because of concerns for her safety. Rebecca asked her what this past week has been like.
Last week was hell on earth, hearing people you know are dying. The bombing, the sounds, the damage in the agricultural land, in the houses, inside the villages of south of Lebanon has been immense. And the amount of terror we are going through, I can't even begin to describe it to you. I can't even begin. You never know when you're next.
And you really feel that it could be you next.
Oh, it's not safe. It's not safe even to leave. It's not safe to choose to leave. Okay, the day that people left, people were in thousands on the road and they were stuck from 11 a.m. to the next 11 a.m. next day. So it's not even easy to decide to leave, especially when you have like someone who needs medication, like my mother. It's not easy. The road itself to leave from south to Beirut is not safe. So you never know whenever it's your turn. It's very sad, honestly.
How did you make the decision in the end to stay put?
Staying here is unsafe. At the same time, leaving is unsafe. But for me, it's my mom's decision not to leave her home. It's been 34, 35 years that she lived here in this home. It's not easy for her to leave the home, the land. She refuses the idea of moving. She's a bit terrorized by the idea of going on the road and repeating the 2006 experience, being lost on the road, not knowing where to go to, you know. So she actually took the decision. And you have to agree, like, in times like this, I don't know if it's her gut feeling that's saying please stay or not, but I have to agree with her.
Are you worried about the Israelis staging a ground offensive?
Yeah, definitely. I'm worried about invasion. I'm worried that the war expands. I'm worried that more people die. I'm worried that people that I love die.
Living in Lebanon, which has had so many problems over the past few years, the economic collapse, it's been quite a stressful time, hasn't it? Over the past year, this conflict has added to all of that. What are your fears as to what could happen now in the country?
I don't think the country can sustain a full-on war. Now it is a war. To me, we are in a war zone.
A resident of southern Lebanon there talking to my colleague Rebecca Kesby. You're with NewsHour on the BBC World Service. This is Rob Young with NewsHour from the BBC World Service. So what effect will Hassan Nasrallah's death have on Hezbollah's capabilities? I've been speaking to a former Israel Defence Forces intelligence analyst. Sarit Zahavi now heads the Alma Research Centre, which specialises in security issues in northern Israel. And she spoke to us from a bomb shelter in her home near the border with Lebanon.
Killing of the leader of Hezbollah does not kill all of Hezbollah, but killing the leaders of Hezbollah, targeting their launchers and rockets, targeting their surface-to-sea missiles in the Dahiya. All of that together brings a result that eventually will bring me, as a person who lives up north, much more security. Fighting terror, there is no magic formula. We are willing to take the time needed to win against terror because it is clear that after a year that we were under daily attacks by Hezbollah that refused to even negotiate a diplomatic arrangement, IDF had to change completely the rules of the game. And I think this is what it's doing now.
Is that likely to also involve Israeli troops going into Lebanon, boots on the ground in Lebanon?
I don't know. I think this depends on how much damage was caused to the rockets and launchers which were stored underground next to the border. For now, it seems that not enough damage because, as you said, these are still being launched. If eventually, in order to stop the launching of rockets to Israel, IDF will have to get in, okay, we don't want that. I can say it from the most personal level. It is my friends that were killed in Lebanon as soldiers 25 years ago. And we will do that only if there is no other choice in order to bring the residents of the north back to their homes. But if Hezbollah will continue the shooting and the launching of rockets, as it had done since this morning and during the night as well, eventually we will have no choice.
The purpose of this Israeli operation in Lebanon is to allow 60,000 or so Israelis to go back to their homes in the north of Israel. Yet we've had well over 100,000 Lebanese been forced to leave their homes in the south of Lebanon. How much displacement, how much death and destruction in Lebanon is worth it, in your view, to allow Israelis to return home?
Why are you saying how much destruction in Lebanon? I would rephrase the question, how much destruction in Israel and Lebanon? The answer lies in for how long Hezbollah is not willing to disarm. Why one of the armies of Lebanon is constantly threatening to destroy the state of Israel and suggesting us Israelis to pack our suitcases and go back to Europe, even though more than half of us were born in the Middle East, including myself. the suffering is on both sides. The feeling that somebody is threatening us is on both sides. It's not just in Lebanon. And you cannot ignore the suffering that we have here in the past year and in the past 18 years while Hezbollah was rearming since the previous war. And I saw them every day on the border with their big cameras, wearing uniforms, building their watching towers. And this is not the Lebanese army. This is a terrorist group. So if you ask for how long this suffering will continue, as much as needed to bring security to both people.
Sarit Zahavi there, who's a former Israel Defense Forces intelligence analyst, talking to us underground from a bomb shelter in her home near the border with Lebanon. Well, let's head north to Lebanon now to speak to a long-standing diplomat in the region. Tracy Shamoon, who is in Beirut, used to be Lebanon's ambassador to Jordan. I spoke to her before we had confirmation from Hezbollah that Hassan Nasrallah was dead. She gave us her reaction to the announcement by Israel that he'd been killed.
It's obviously shocking for everybody. They destroyed six buildings with 2,000-ton bunker buster bombs. It's rubble where the bombs fell. And I don't know, they must have like amazing technology to be able to know who's in the rubble. And to be certain of it, because I know that our government has only been able to dig up seven bodies. And I think the others have been, you know, turned to dust.
This is a big moment in Lebanon.
Yes, it's a huge moment in Lebanon. Of course, it's going to, you know, change the whole equation. Now, don't forget that Hezbollah is a, you know, hierarchical organization and that his succession is ensured and has been ensured for decades. Hashim Safieddine, who is his successor, has come out of the same school as Nasrallah and has been in charge of Hezbollah's executive branch for decades.
So Hassan Nasrallah may be dead, but Hezbollah is not. What are people in the country saying about this?
Well, everybody right now is, you know, shocked. Whether you like Nasrallah or not, he was a very impressive figure, a dominating figure in our history for the last, you know, couple of decades. And so I think the Lebanese still haven't really quite absorbed the information. Also, it's going to create a lot of disruption, you know, and possible security issues.
Well, when you talk about internal problems, we've spoken before about how broadly a majority of people in Lebanon do not like the power, the influence of Hezbollah.
Of course, but there's an ethos to Hezbollah, you know, and especially after the events in Gaza. Lebanon has three large communities. They have a Sunni, a Shia, and a Christian community. Now, a percentage of the Christian community likes Hezbollah and likes Hassan Nasrallah, and another percentage doesn't. I would say they're divided in half. But the Sunni community, certainly in the last, you know, battle in Gaza to defend the Palestinians, has sided with Hezbollah and has grown closer to Hezbollah. And then you have the Shia community. So there is a predominance, I would say today, of people who were relying on Hezbollah to support the Palestinians and also fight, you know, Israel.
Now, one of the key questions now is how does Hezbollah respond to the death of its leader and how does Hezbollah's backer Iran respond? What is your assessment?
They're going to continue to do what they were doing, which is the big thorn in the side of Israel, which is render the north uninhabitable by the settlers. By, you know, even if you lob one or send one rocket over a day, it's certainly not going to create any security for the northerners to come back. But that could also provoke Israel into doing a land incursion, or I'm going to call it a land invasion, rather, because they're going to feel more emboldened now that Hezbollah has been weakened. Well, Iran is now saying that they are going to respond, which is the scary part, which is where I think the rest of the world did not want to arrive at. You have the problem now of the U.S. elections, which is complicating that whole situation. So I'm going to say that the situation is extremely volatile and that the Israelis have succeeded in dragging the world into something which could be a very dangerous regional conflict.
Do you think we are now heading towards that?
I think we're in that.
Tracy Shamoon in Beirut. Well, in the past few minutes, Iranian state media have said that a senior member of Iran's Revolutionary Quds Force was killed in that attack in Beirut yesterday. You can get more lines from this developing story on the BBC News website, where a live page is running throughout the day. That is it from this edition of NewsHour. Thanks for listening.
I'm Gabriel Gatehouse, and from BBC Radio 4, this is Series 2 of The Coming Storm. There's a divide in American politics between those who think democracy is in peril and those who think it's already been subverted, hollowed out from the inside. As America prepares to elect its next president, we go through the looking glass into a world where nothing is as it seems, and the institutions of the state are a facade. Listen wherever you get your BBC podcasts.